you, Michelle. In terms of the DPOC, at both its recent meetings, it's had a very fairly full discussion of the latest work plan, as Ian and Hugh have outlined to you this morning. At its meeting last week, it focused in particular on the lease project. And this followed some comments that were made by Sir Wim Bischoff. As Michelle said, he gave a fairly candid presentation at the July meeting. And there were some issues around the lease accounting project, where there were some concerns raised by the FRC and a number of other stakeholders as to whether they felt that the ISB was listening to some of the concerns that they had raised and how the board was dealing with those. I think we had a good and full discussion in Mexico, and I think a lot of the concerns are being addressed, but sometimes there is a way of, I think, closing the loop when people such as the FRC do raise issues, and I think at the board meeting next week there will be an ultimate closing of that loop from the comments made in July. But in the discussion in Mexico, the ISB did commit to review its public disclosure, the rationale used to reach tentative decisions. I think they're there in most of the board papers, but sometimes when you come later on, rather than going back to each board paper, is there anything that might be more accessible? We'll wait and see. The DPOC did make a request that the staff demonstrate that the board or the interpretations committee has publicly disclosed the rationale, and I think it's there. In particular, in the run-up to when you're coming to finalise a standard, when the DPOC goes through a full life cycle review of the project. I think the committee would like to know of things maybe a little bit earlier, so it's not taken by surprise at the end. The technical staff have also agreed to look at the project work plan, just to give an idea of where timelines might be slipping. I think it was Alan who mentioned the time it can take to get from discussion paper or exposure after full standard. And I think it's just giving a more complete snapshot of maybe where the pinch points are coming with the board agenda. In terms of the taxonomy, I think, which both Hugh and Alan mentioned this morning, we have this trial due process that looks at the greater involvement of the board in terms of the taxonomy content. And I think the committee thinks this should be regarded as a priority, and the hope is that the board do get comfortable with their role with the new IFRS taxonomy, and that the trial run process should receive high priority, be completed as soon as possible. That all said, at both meetings and looking across the board at the agenda proposals and the work plan, the committee was satisfied that all projects are proceeding in a manner consistent with what's set out in the due process handbook. At both meetings as well, I think as Ian mentioned in his review earlier, we're coming to the end of the work of the effects analysis consultative group, I hope. And the DPOC last week were happy to commend the near final draft of the report for approval. Well, it's the work of the group, but for the board to take on and to embed into its processes any conclusions and recommendations that are not already there. The ISB already does a lot in this field, and if you look back, for example, to the last Lisa's exposure draft, there was a very full effects analysis as part of that document. The DPOC was appreciative of the work that's been done by the consultative group, which will disband after finalising the report, and agreed that the report be finalised and publicised as soon as possible. I think it'd be useful to get it out this side of Christmas, not least, I think, because it will be an important signal, in particular to the European Commission in its evaluation of IFRS, that the board does take effects analysis very seriously and has come up with proposals that look into how it conducts it. So we're looking forward to that coming very soon. In July, the DPOC looked across a review of the ISB's consultative groups to see how they're functioning, and I think for the most part, it was happy that the groups are proceeding well. Also agreed to the ISB's proposals to wind up a number of groups. You've heard this morning about the setting up of the transition group on impairment. There was an existing group on impairment that's been around for a while, and that group will be disbanded, and I think that the financial instruments working group will also go as well. The DPOC also reviews any correspondence, and in Mexico we actually had one. The supervisory board of EFRAG on the 29th of September submitted a letter addressed to Hans, but also copied to Michelle and Scott Evans, suggesting, and this was on the back of an earlier suggestion they'd made in the review of the due process handbook back in 2012, that there should be a public fatal flaw review of the text of proposed standards before they're finalised. Now, at the time, the DPOC took the view that it wasn't necessary as a mandatory step, and there was some concern that this would basically enshrine yet another mandatory due process step into the whole due process. But the current handbook gives the board the flexibility to go for such a public fatal flaw review if it thinks it's necessary. Now, and Saskia's here, so Hans van Damme will be getting a holding reply on this, because one of the things the DPOC asked for was that the staff and the ISB reviewed the suggestion and returned to the DPOC with advice to say, is there anything that might change that position that's in the handbook? So at the moment, we're going to give a holding reply to EFRAG and think about the issue in longer term. And I think that completes the DPOC report. Should I stop there for any questions before we get on to the next bit?
Yael, do you want to add anything about the meetings?
Yeah, I just want to, I know you it was addressed earlier, but ASAF review is something that we've been asked a lot in the last couple of months. The bottom line in terms of practical plan is, first of all, the deadline for the 2 years review is April, but we feel that in order to perform it well and really get as much feedback as we need, probably the whole membership issue should be postponed a little bit, not a lot. So just the decision by trustees was to extend the current memberships just for 3 more months, so just to perform the evaluation and then make any changes as needed based on the feedback that we collect on these issues as well. And also, in terms of the feedback, we intend to do this as a consultation with all the key parties. And of course, before we move forward and we have some recommendations, we will bring it to this to the council to hear your points before we make any changes. So, in order to enable this as a very detailed process, I think we needed a little bit more time.
Yael, just on that, I'm going to just ask a question and perhaps be a little provocative, and I didn't raise it last week. Is it too early to do an ASAF review? Ian made the comment earlier this morning around, and you weren't here, nor Michelle, in terms of he hopes that it's not too much fundamental change and that he thinks, you know, as someone who's involved, that it, you know, there is some real value, and have there been enough meetings to really see what value? And I know it's in the terms of reference, however, and I guess this is my comment, and to be fair, Christoph whispered this to me as well. So just in terms of feedback now, and I'd be very interested, or maybe Michelle or Yael, you respond first and see if there are other advisory council members who've got any view on that.
I will give a very simple answer. And I only commit myself. If there is nothing to debate, we will conclude that there is nothing to do. If there are some issues that have been raised, it's not necessarily a good thing to wait and see, whereas we've committed to review after 2 years.
I just want to add that in some, with some issues, I think not only 2 years is too short, it might be too long, and we've already included some changes going after a year. So we want to make this succeed. It's important to us. So it depends what. There are a couple of questions that are very fundamental. For example, the constitutional status of ASAF, which my personal view is that it's too early. But other questions, such as the practicalities of how it works, any sort of membership issues, scope, these are things that we need to address quickly and not wait. So I think it depends on the point, and the trustees have the flexibility to decide that some points could be delayed and reconsidered in a year, in 2 years, and others addressed immediately.
So I guess it's around the scope of the review, the depth of the review, and perhaps deferring some of the bits. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm not supposed to ask questions myself. And I've done it twice already today. Naughty, naughty. Okay.
Privilege of the chairs.
Any questions or comments around... Thank you, Michelle and David and Yale, for a very comprehensive report there. And I see, Peter, you have your flag up, so go for it.
Thank you. In the spirit of asking a provocative question, I shall ask another one. I'm sorry about this. Governance is something we're going to be talking about, and governance is something that's very important to everybody around this table. And a key role of the trustees is to ensure that the International Accounting Standards Board is doing, if you like, the right thing. And there have been a number of issues raised from this body. I raised it last time, for example, about a lack of feedback on the initiatives we've suggested or recommendations we've made. And we've heard the same from some members of ASAF. So whilst we had a very good and thorough review, and indeed particularly on the DPOC, what are the trustees actually doing to hold the ISAB to account to ensure they're operating in the interests of all of the stakeholders? We don't have an action list, for example, on items that the Advisory Council has suggested, and there's no feedback to us as what's happened to the recommendations we've made over the years. So just wondering how strong the trustees feel about their responsibility in holding to account.
Well, I don't know how to respond because I don't have the same feeling. I have the feeling that the DPOC does a quite remarkable job looking into all the issues and the way the ISB has addressed the issues and responded to the people and explained its position. And so I really don't see what is the point. In a system where tricky issues are debated globally, there is no surprise that not everybody is always happy and that not everybody has the feeling that they have been fully understood. But when you look at the way the process goes and the way the trustees look into the way the process goes, I think it is very difficult to imagine doing more. Sometimes what we do, and it's part of the discussions we could have in the future, is to have in-depth explanations by the chair of the board or the vice chair of the board on very complex issues where we do not necessarily understand exactly the pros and cons, although we don't have to participate in the technical discussion, but nevertheless, we need to better understand. And this is what happens. I'm sorry, but I don't really see the point. We try to do our best. We know that we do not reply individually. This is a point that has been explained in the public session with our Mexican colleagues. Some of them mentioned the fact that we received comments by organizations and by individuals. And usually we received tens or even hundreds of them. And the feedback we do doesn't address specifically individual inputs, but because this is a question of resources. In some cases, on major issues with major counterparts, there might be bilateral discussions, but in the process, normally we deliver, I think, quite comprehensive feedback statements. You know, I'll be candid with you. I try to do my homework beyond my domain. And sometimes I read the papers, the technical papers. I do not always understand. But there is one thing I am sure of, which is that all the public papers that are made are extraordinarily comprehensive to explain the pros and cons and the reasons why. Now, this is not necessarily convincing for everybody, and people may have the feeling that although they have said something, they have been not enough listened to. But unfortunately, I think that is the rule of the game. I don't have. Maybe you could be a little more specific, but I don't have the feeling that from a governance point of view we should do major progress on this. I candidly believe that the IASB and the DPOC do their best.
Michelle, maybe I can just make a few comments from having attended probably, I mean, I've attended in some form the last three trustees meeting, but last week I attended most of it, and I also attended the DPOC meeting itself, subcommittee meeting. And there was actually quite a lot of debate at the DPOC meeting around, if you like, consultation and how much feedback you get, because there are so many bits of consultation. There are formal bits, there are informal bits. Some people want it off the record. Some people are saying, but you didn't respond to me when I met you, and I'm going to say in the loo, wherever it may be, you know, that was an informal thing. So there is a great deal of where, and I would concur with Michelle that the DPOC are absolutely, that is their role. And for me, who is probably not as governance expert as you, but like my day job in inverted commas is now governance, I actually, from what I've seen, think they actually do a pretty reasonable job. Having said that, the sessions are in private, and perhaps the information that emanates, if you like, from the governance body is perhaps not as transparent, I'm thinking aloud here, as maybe it could be, so that the likes of the people sitting around this table or other people don't necessarily see that's happening. So, Peter, you have those type of queries. And, in fact, one matter that actually got raised at the trustees' meeting, which I was going to bring back to the advisory council potentially for an agenda item, was in fact around the aspects of the trustees' meeting being in private and in public, because there are two parts to the trustees' meeting and the consideration of that. You also raised, Peter, the issue about we don't get any feedback about our recommendations. I think we have to acknowledge that we are an advisory body. We're not making recommendations. It is advisory. And in some ways, I've jotted down what you said there, for us to think about, if you like, how we ourselves can deal with that, as opposed to potentially saying, well, you come back to us, that somehow, and I'm looking at Aida and she's thinking, oh, no, don't give me some more work, that we keep a rolling, if you like, agenda item of the things that we've talked about in terms of our recommendations to the trustees or the board and what's happened with those. I see that as our responsibility, not necessarily the board, because we're not a governance body. They are not, to me, they do not need to be held to account to us. We're providing advice. And Christoph wants to add something.
Maybe to add one thing, the question of do we get feedback on the feedback we give to the board and trustees was debated more than once. Let me call it the early years of the council. And I can say that I've seen a lot of improvement in that regard. We now see very often in papers consideration given to views that were expressed of the council and reference being made to views expressed at the council. I think we've got to be aware that only very rarely does a council go for a vote and go out to say, this is the position of the council, and we've always said that usually we don't want to do that. And that, of course, makes it more difficult to come back and respond to what we've said, because it is so diverse what we've said. So if you take the views we expressed, as an example on the disclosure initiative, isn't really that the council today expressed a common view on it. It was different views expressed, and I think that's the purpose of us. That's why we have this diverse group, and that's why we don't do any polling or voting.
I respond
now,
very
Peter,
briefly?
I am going to stop you because it is, we've still got another session to go, effectively before for Yale to talk about the effectiveness, a little review of structure and effectiveness of the foundation. But just before we link on to that, is there any other questions or comments, general comments around Michelle's report? Yeah. And Peter, I think it's a valid thing for us to come back to. Don't get me wrong there.
Maybe just the last one on Peter's remark. My presence here can be a last, recours. If there is really a significant issue that has not been addressed and you feel strongly that there should be some kind of explanation, if I can provide it to you, I would be more than happy to do it.
Okay, Yale, I'm going to... Oh, David's going to do it, sorry.
That's all right. Okay, well, as Michelle mentioned, we're about to embark on the next review of the organisation, and in the interest of time, I'll do a whistle-stop tour through this. It's just to give you a bit of the background and then seek some initial views and suggestions. If I could go to the next slide. We're an organisation that likes to review ourselves. The Constitution requires the trustees to undertake, and it's up there, a review of the entire structure and effectiveness of the organisation every 5 years. Now, that's been in the past deemed to be a review of the Constitution. So we've had two reviews of the Constitution, but that's not been enough for us. We've also had two strategy reviews, and the latest one published its report in early 2012, and you would have thought, well, maybe that gives us a five-year respite to 2017, but the view was taken, no, it's not enough, and we should be doing another one now, so here we are again. In terms of the outcomes of the previous reviews, next one, please, Aid. We have seen some significant enhancements and improvements, and I'll use the headings from the last strategy review because I think they're pretty good. In terms of our mission, defining the public interest, can you go back one, Ada, please? The governance, we're independent and publicly accountable, the process that we follow, and the funding, which has been mentioned a number of times. On mission, you can move now. The purpose of financial reporting standards has been clarified with specific designation of investors and other market participants as a target audience. Now, this comes back to one of Peter's earlier remarks this morning about who are the primary users, and I guess we'll see that coming through the conceptual framework project as that develops, whether that moves or not. Adoption of IFRS, as developed by the ISB, remains the long-term goal. We know that different countries are doing different things. We've heard about India converging, possibly with some carve-outs. Japan, with its JMIS that wasn't mentioned this morning, that it's brought in. But we recognise that different jurisdictions have different ways, but adoption remains the goal. In terms of scope, to date, it's been on for for-profit corporate entities, including SMEs, and something that's becoming increasingly important is the consistency of application and implementation. In terms of governance, we've developed, next please, the three-tier structure with the monitoring board as our link to the public authorities, the trustees providing the governance and oversight role, and the ISB and the interpretations committee as our standard-setting related activities. We've clarified the trustees' oversight role and got regular public reporting. And just to come back to another of Peter's points on the DPOC, yes, the meetings are not held in public, but you will find a very full report of the meeting will come out in a matter of weeks. And if I wasn't sat here now, I'd be writing that report. Moving on to process, we've seen significant enhancements in due process over the different reviews, and if you just look down that list, that is quite a mega list of things. And will we look at all this again? Well, probably. And then in terms of moving on, funding, this remains the challenge. From the last strategy review report, everything in terms of mission, governance and process, the recommendations have been delivered. Funding, as Michelle said, we've made some good progress, but we've got more to do. and that might be something we need to look at again. So in terms of next, please, the forthcoming review, we've had a couple of discussions in July and last week. We've agreed, as Michelle again said, that the executive committee will be the review committee that will report proposals to the trustees. We have to take into account the output of the trustees' self-evaluation that was discussed last week, where we got a fairly long list of suggestions. And one of the challenges that the team led by Yale has to face is how we put that into some kind of prioritisation and structure that we can take forward to the next meeting in Zurich, and then determine what, as Michelle says, can we handle internally and what do we bring into this review for a public consultation. We don't propose to rerun the whole of that review. I don't think we'll look again at the three-tier structure. Both the strategic review and the monitoring board governance review, the responses to that were fairly firm of saying, leave that as it is. We will include a review of the effectiveness of the interpretations committee, which since 2012 has had a more prominent role. And in terms of the council, we will, I think, look at the output of your own self-assessment from last year and the follow-up actions, including, as Joanna says, how the new secondary objective plays out, and your probably thoughts of saying, how do we maintain the relevance and effectiveness of this council as part of the effectiveness of the whole organisation. So you won't escape discussing this. You'll probably be fed up of it by the end. But in terms of remit, as I said, it's been on for for-profit corporate entities. The idea of whether we move to covering the public sector was examined by the trustees in April 2014 in the context of the EBSASB governance review, and you'll recall that we brought it to this council in February, where we had a very full discussion on that, and your input was really important to the trustees as part of their consideration in April. And I did report back that it was important in June. So there's an example of getting some feedback. We've deemed it not feasible at least in the short to medium term, but maybe this will come up again as part of the review, as will the issue of the not-for-profit sector more widely. This is the private sector side, where I think things are less developed. About the only thing I've seen recently, there was a report in the UK by the CCAB accounting bodies that seemed to suggest there was a demand for the third sector to have some kind of international standards, but I think that's some way off. Relationship with wider reporting, again, I think this is something we need to look at, and where the council, its input will be important, and this afternoon there'll be yet another session on the future of corporate reporting. And, of course, our old friend, the relationship between the purpose of financial reporting standards and other public policy objectives, I think will be looked at again. On other themes, next please. Funding, I think we'll have to take another look. Governance, as Peter said, we do review corporate governance developments to make sure we remain in line with best practice. Benchmarking, the strategy review did suggest that we should have periodic benchmarking, in particular on due process against other organisations. It's whether we try and see more widely how we match up against other standard setting and organisations. And in terms of themes from last week, I think, as I say, consistent application of IFRS might be a theme that we need to look at. And again, this is a role that, you know, how much does the ISB, the foundation, do compared to others who have important roles in this, such as the regulators? We have the statement of protocols with IOSCO and ESMA, for example. Is there more that we should be doing there? So in terms of next, please. Next steps, we will be going for some kind of public consultation, most likely in the first half of 2015. The two previous constitution reviews and the strategy review from 2010 all had two rounds of consultation. It's probably a bit premature to know yet whether we go for one or two. Let's see how we go. But throughout that, we will be coming to this council and seeking your input and ideas. But today, it was just to say, is there anything, and I've taken note of Peter's comments, is there anything you think we should be doing as part of the upcoming review? And that's a very whistle-stop tour. I'll hand back to you, Joe.
Thanks, David. And as David said, the purpose of for any input today, is there anything that effectively we think in that whistle-stop tour, or certainly in the paper, which we will all have read, there is anything missing from that review, acknowledging the fact that the details and the specific things will come back to us as individual items or as a whole. So any feedback as to what anybody thinks might be missing? Surya.
Not so much missing, Joanna, but I'd like a clarification. David, you talked about consistency of application and implementation, and that's a story that's evolved over time, because there was a time when I think the board didn't really want to go there, and now we are venturing into that zone. So just like an understanding of the shift, number one, and number two, we do understand it's a challenge, so how do we go about doing it?
I'll answer that. I don't think there's a fundamental shift in the role, because consistency of application is still at the hands, or application of the standards is still at the hands of others, and we are not responsible for them, and we will never be responsible for them. But the thinking is that we've been supporting consistency of application, so we've been helping the bodies that are responsible around the world to do that in various ways, and to what extent we can do more in that respect is a question for us. So structurally, there has been a number of initiatives that we've taken, a number of relationship, a number of MOUs that have been supporting others. But is it time for us to think about it more rigorously and extend more support than needed? And in that sense, resources is, of course, a very, very important question, because the issue of consistency of application requires a network, a collection of information, and extending a lot of help and support that requires us to think about that. So I don't think it's a change in our role or a change in our mission, but understanding that inconsistency of application of IFRSs is a major risk for the organization, and it is something that you'll probably discuss tomorrow at the risk discussion. Understanding that this is a fundamental risk for us going forward, I think we have to take stock of whether we're doing the best we can, we're using our resources in the most effective way to help others still that have the major role in that to do that and to achieve best results in order to really become a global standard, not just in theory, but in practice.
And you'll see, Surya, that Yale is passionate about this. She and I have had a conversation about it, and she has, if you haven't picked it up, given you some thoughts as to what one thing on your blank piece of paper about the risks for tomorrow might be. Well done, Yale. She's determined to get it through there. And what I would also say is, actually, that's what the Interpretations Committee has been doing, certainly since the review in 2012. To me, it's a fundamental part of that. Goro.
Yeah, this may also, my comment may also be that the regard. Okay. My comment may also be that regarding that the consistent application, but the one of my concern is that the capacity of IFRS Interpretation Committee to issue interpretations on timely basis. So I wonder if you have any chance to consider to outsource preliminary interpretation to a group of national standard setters to exploit their resources. Having said that, I think this should be considered carefully so that it does not undermine globally consistent application.
Thanks, Goro. That is, I think, a useful observation in terms of the sort of things that might come back in the review, and certainly when it comes to us, for us to perhaps explore that a little bit further in that particular aspect. Egbert, I think you were next.
Thank you, Joanna. A thought did come to my mind when going through these slides and referring back to the IPSASBE discussion. If I'm correct, there are a number of organizations who currently are reviewing their governance structure. like the GRI and the IIRC, and the thought may come up to what extent there are benefits to be achieved by somehow thinking about possible combinations and being able to benefit off each other's structure. And that might be a question that may come up at some time in the process, and it would be interesting to sort of pre-think that, what potential response or position could be.
And I think as much as anything else, that fits into, again, some of our discussion this afternoon around the corporate reporting dialogue. I mean, that's more around that what they do, but the how they do it and the structure. So perhaps just take that observation as well in terms of your review. Steve Liu.
Thank you, Joanna. My comment is related to Koro and Surya's comment relating to interpretations committee. Now the consistent application is increasingly more important. So to achieve that goal, we need to expand the interpretations committee immediately. For example, making it a standing committee so that they respond in a timely manner. What's happening now is if each country has a problem or issue, then they approach the individual ISB staff members and get informal answers to their questions. That's not a good way to do it. So that within the resource constraint, we have to expand the interpretations committee membership, the STEM membership, and making it a standing committee. One question to ask is, what is the strategy of ISB? Is it your strategy that making a transition resource group for all the standards you issue newly? Okay, then one option may be merging the transition resource groups with interpretations committee.
Two points I could address there. One, I don't think we should take it for granted that having lots of interpretations is a good thing. And if we go back, we've moved it up a bit in the last 2 or 3 years, but if we are not careful, we'll become very much a rules-based organisation rather than a principles-based organisation. So it's not a clear-cut answer that more interpretations are the answer to more consistent applications. And that's a debate we need to have, I think, in the review for a start. The transition resource groups, there's absolutely no assumption, as I said this morning, that there are going to be any more at all. We have two. We don't know if we're going to have any more or not. And we have to wait and see. They're a different sort of animal from IFRIC, from the Interpretations Committee. If we didn't have them, then things would go to the Interpretations Committee, so that would be effectively your combination of the two anyway.
Okay, thank you, Ian. And certainly, David and Yael, I think a little bit of food for thought in terms of how that review might pan out. So some useful feedback there, which I'm sure David will report back to us on. Okay. If there are no further questions or comments or any last comments from any of you, Michelle, Yael, David, around the trustees, then thank you very much. And I think it's unusual. Well, I guess it isn't that there are two